It's Thursday, May 28th. Today we're looking at a report detailing Donald Trump's stock portfolio and how it aligns with his policy shifts, which honestly is about as subtle as a sledgehammer. We're also tracking a violent ceasefire in the Middle East and a reality check for the AI industry as the subsidy era officially ends and the bills start coming due. Plus, we've got a look at why your furniture might be more important than your willpower when it comes to actually hitting your goals. The United States is currently navigating the decline of the neoliberal political and economic order. According to Political Orders, this framework, defined by market liberalization and deregulation since the 1970s, is losing its legitimacy following the 2008 financial crisis and widening wealth inequality. The transition away from the preceding New Deal order was facilitated by bipartisan efforts, such as the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which deregulated the industry under the assumption that technological advancement made government oversight obsolete. The result of this shift has been a dramatic increase in wealth inequality, with CEO compensation skyrocketing compared to the average worker. Look, the reality is that the recovery from the 2008 crash disproportionately benefited the financial elites, which is exactly why the credibility of the old system is in the toilet. This has created a political vacuum that paved the way for figures like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, as the public searches for a new economic order to replace the one that clearly broke. Speaking of Donald Trump, he is currently facing allegations of unprecedented self-enrichment through the use of official power. According to source material from Systemic Corruption, a 113-page report details over 3,600 stock transactions made by Trump between January and March. He invested heavily in companies directly impacted by his own policy decisions, including tech, defense, and media firms. Examples include his personal investments in Oracle while brokering the TikTok deal and in Palantir while the company was securing billion-dollar government contracts. Furthermore, he invested in NVIDIA and later facilitated the sale of their AI chips to China, despite national security concerns, and personally invested in Boeing before traveling with their CEO to sell planes to the Chinese government. Beyond the stock market, Trump is reportedly attempting to create a $1.8 billion taxpayer-funded slush fund. While ostensibly a settlement for a lawsuit against the IRS, the lawsuit was dropped, and the fund is now controlled by Trump's attorney general, without oversight from a judge or Congress. Honestly, calling this a racket feels like an understatement. It's a brazen use of the presidency as a private ATM. On the international front, the standoff between the U.S. and Iran has settled into what is being called a violent ceasefire. According to Violent Ceasefire, while Trump's strategy aims for a deal that avoids military commitment, the reality is a state of perpetual conflict. Iran continues to mine the Strait of Hormuz and attack ships, while the U.S. retaliates without declaring an end to the ceasefire. This dynamic has inadvertently increased Iran's geopolitical leverage by demonstrating its control over a critical global choke point. The situation is further complicated by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's goal of regime change in Iran. As reported in Netanyahu's Political Survival, Israeli military operations in southern Lebanon against Hezbollah have escalated, signaling a breakdown in the April 17th ceasefire. This is a problem because a cessation of fighting in Lebanon was a key condition for Iran to agree to a long-term truce with the U.S. Netanyahu is facing corruption charges and a divided domestic front, so he's heavily incentivized to keep a hardline stance to stay in power, even if it undermines broader regional de-escalation efforts. In the United Kingdom, the National Security Vetting Agency recommended that Peter Mandelson be denied security clearance for an ambassadorship to Washington. According to Vetting Overrides, the agency flagged his associations with senior figures in China, Russia, and Israel, including Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska. Despite these flags, the Foreign Office overruled the agency. Senior civil servants claimed the case was borderline, but there is no documented evidence of how these risks were supposedly mitigated. It's an extraordinary lack of a paper trail for something as serious as a national security risk. This lack of clarity is what former Prime Minister Tony Blair is currently critiquing. He's warned that Britain is sliding towards relegation from the top tier of nations, arguing the Labour Party is prioritizing political maneuvering over substantive reform regarding economic growth and the AI revolution. Back in the States, the Texas Senate primary is seeing a shift toward ideological purity. According to the Source podcast, Ken Paxton has defeated incumbent John Cornyn, a victory that highlights Donald Trump's enduring influence. This signals a move toward fighter candidates who prioritize confrontational styles over traditional legislative focus. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, the mayoral race is highlighting a disconnect between established politicians and the public. The source material notes that reality TV personality Spencer Pratt's candidacy is gaining traction by focusing on tangible issues like homelessness and wildfires. While he's an unconventional candidate, his message is resonating because the incumbent, Karen Bass, is facing scrutiny for her handling of local crises. It turns out that simply being an alternative to Trump isn't enough if you can't get the trash picked up. On the economic front, investment experts are warning against index hugging. According to Beyond Index Hugging, the best way to hedge risk right now is to reduce bond duration by about 1 year. This technical adjustment helps mitigate interest rate risk during market volatility. There's also a focus on the internal dynamics of the Democratic Party. Centrist candidates who connect with working-class values, like Graham Platter in Maine, are being viewed as more electorally viable than highly progressive figures in states like Texas. In Australia, the Albanese government is playing a high-stakes political game with tax reform. They are bundling disparate measures, like a popular tax offset and a controversial capital gains tax reform, into a single bill. This forces the opposition into a wedge, where they have to either vote against the good stuff or accept the bad. The proposed CGT reform, which moves to an inflation-based model, is already facing heat from the startup community who say it'll kill innovation. Finally, some quick hits. Parts of Europe are currently being hit by a record-breaking May heatwave. At least 11 people have died, and the heat is disrupting everything from London's public transport to the French Open. In sports, the State of Origin rugby series kicked off with New South Wales beating Queensland 22-20. And for those looking off-planet, the Source podcast reports NASA is planning to establish a permanent base on the moon's south pole by 2028. It's an ambitious timeline for the first humans on the lunar surface in over 50 years. Let's just hope we manage the infrastructure better up there than we have down here. The tech industry is currently hitting a wall with AI, and it's not just a theoretical one, it's an economic one. According to recent reports, the annual AI slowdown panic has arrived early this year. We're seeing a major shift from what you could call the subsidy era, where everyone was experimenting for free or cheap, to a trade-off era. Basically, the bill is coming due. Token availability is tightening, and usage-based pricing is on the rise. Demand is simply outstripping supply, and that's forcing a reevaluation of whether these massive valuations for OpenAI and Anthropic actually hold water. It turns out, extensive AI experimentation is a lot more expensive than the growth-at-all-costs crowd anticipated. Honestly, it's about time. The industry is finally being forced to optimize for efficiency instead of just throwing compute at every problem and hoping for a miracle. Part of this reality check is coming from better ways to measure these models. New benchmarks like DeepSui are moving past simple pass-fail tests. They're scraping actual GitHub issues to see if these models can handle real-world engineering tasks without just memorizing the answers. The results are interesting. OpenAI's latest model is reportedly crushing competitors like GPT-4 and Claude 3 Opus, not just in finishing the job, but in how much it costs to get there. The big differentiator now isn't just intelligence, it's self-verification. The models that can check their own work are pulling away, while others are reportedly struggling with basic prompt adherence in these high-stakes environments. This shift in capability is also changing the AI is coming for your job narrative. We're seeing a pivot from leaders like Sam Altman and David Solomon. They've stopped talking about a jobs apocalypse and started talking about organizational friction. That's executive speak for, it's actually really hard to fire people and replace them with a bot. Goldman Sachs is still predicting significant task automation, but the focus has shifted to job augmentation. But to make that work, the infrastructure has to change. This is where the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, comes in. It allows an AI to act more like a coworker, someone who can actually look at your calendar, check your email, and book an interview without you holding its hand. The goal here is a shared organizational brain. Y Combinator has been experimenting with this, moving toward an AI-native operating system where every internal document is accessible to these agents. They found that giving agents read-only SQL access to their data led to a massive spike in usage. They're even running self-improving dream cycles where agents analyze their own past conversations to figure out how to be more helpful. It sounds a bit sci-fi, but it's really just a high-tech version of a performance review. Finally, we're seeing this move into the physical world. Robotics is having its own open-source moment. Companies like Seed Studio are putting NVIDIA Jetson-powered devices into $200 robot arms. Instead of spending months writing code for spatial planning, users are training these robots by hand-guiding them. They're moving away from the idea of a single, expensive humanoid robot and toward modularity, interchangeable heads and arms that you can swap out. By using digital twins in simulation before deploying to the real world, they're cutting development cycles from months down to hours. It's a scrappy, decentralized approach to robotics that feels a lot more sustainable than the billion-dollar moonshots we're used to seeing. The common thread here is that the honeymoon is over. Whether it's the cost of tokens or the reality of getting a robot arm to pick up a box, the industry is finally moving from hype to hard engineering. It's less flashy, but it's a hell of a lot more interesting. Hard engineering is one thing, but the business of sports is increasingly looking like a branch of the hospitality and real estate industry. The Big Ten and SEC are widening their revenue gap over the ACC and Big 12, forcing those smaller conferences to look for new cash wherever they can find it. Meanwhile, in Indianapolis, Pacers Sports and Entertainment is moving forward with major mixed-use developments. It's part of a broader trend of turning stadiums into year-round economic anchors, rather than just places where people sit for 3 hours on a Sunday. In the pros, the PWHL, the Women's Hockey League, has started strategically releasing player salary data. The goal here is to build leverage for future collective bargaining. On the flip side, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says he actually regrets legalizing sports betting in his state. He's pointing at the massive, unchecked advertising spend by gambling companies and the negative impact it's having on athletes. It's a rare moment of a politician admitting the gold rush might have some pretty shitty side effects. The NBA is looking at a potential gold mine with the New York Knicks back in the mix. The team hasn't seen this stage since 1999, and the league expects viewership to rival a Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl. If they end up facing Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs, you've got the biggest market against the league's biggest young star. The NHL is also finding its real growth on social media, generating significant revenue through digital platforms. Also, if you've been thinking about building a pickleball court, you might have missed the peak. Data shows new court construction is finally slowing down, suggesting the explosive growth phase is over. Over in Italy, Como 1907 just qualified for the Champions League, but their business model is what's actually interesting. Indonesian billionaires Robert and Michael Hartono bought the club for €800,000 back in 2019, and have since pumped in over $250 million. But they aren't just betting on winning games. They're treating the club like a football Disney. They've partnered with 500 local shops to sell merchandise, and they rent out lakeside villas for premium pre-match hospitality. The idea is to make the club a destination brand so that even if they get relegated, the revenue from tourists keeps the lights on. It's smart, honestly. It turns a volatile sports asset into a hospitality business that just happens to have a pitch in the middle of it. Finally, in the coaching carousel, Bournemouth's Andoni Iraola is officially the hottest free agent on the market. He took the team on an 18-game unbeaten streak and secured European football. But he's leaving now to avoid the inevitable squad strain of a Europa League schedule. While the Liverpool job is open, the smart money says he heads to a stepping stone like Leverkusen or Milan to refine his style before taking on the Premier League's top tier. While those managers are optimizing their squads, here's how you can actually optimize your own brain and environment. New research into goal achievement suggests your personality might be less important than your furniture. According to recent reports on behavioral science, the intent-action gap is the primary reason most goals fail. While having the desire to change gives you about a 28% chance of success, shifting your environment and identity can push that follow-through toward 100%. The data shows that intentions alone only work about half the time. To fix this, experts are pointing to the CALM-B model, which emphasizes implementation intentions. Basically, if-then planning. If it's 6 p.m., then you put on your running shoes. By externalizing the decision to a trigger, you stop relying on willpower, which is a notoriously shitty fuel source. It's a move from I want to be a runner to I am a person who runs when the clock hits 6. But being too reliable has its own set of risks. High-performing professionals are increasingly hitting a wall where technical excellence leads to a silent erosion of mental capacity. When you're urgency addicted, your brain's threat detection spikes, which narrows your creativity. The fix isn't working harder. It's ruthlessly offloading cognitive load and protecting uninterrupted thinking time. One way people are doing that is through external brains, digital task managers like Nozbe that utilize the getting things done methodology. The goal here is to empty your brain daily into a system that distinguishes between calendar events and action-oriented tasks. Look, I'm as skeptical of productivity hacks as anyone, but the logic here is sound. If your brain is busy remembering to buy milk, it's not solving the bigger problems you're actually paid for. If you're applying that logic to your fantasy Premier League team, here's the latest from the veterans. FPL veteran Mark Southerns has refined his strategy for the current season, moving away from reactive transfers to focus on a rigid preseason plan centered on heavy midfield investment. According to Southerns, the key to outperforming the field this year is prioritizing value forwards to free up funds for premium midfielders like Mohamed Salah. While previous seasons were disrupted by the sudden emergence of high-value strikers, Southerns argues this season has been more predictable, allowing him to treat certain midfielders as de facto forwards. He is also advocating for a more aggressive approach to team value, which involves making transfers early in the week to avoid price drops. Southerns admits he'll make moves well before the deadline to save even 0.1 in budget, even if it carries an injury risk. Look, we've all been there. Missing out on a player because you're a fraction of a million short is a special kind of hell. The strategy also includes a significant shift in how he handles captaincy. Southerns has moved toward favoring midfielders with higher point ceilings for the captain's armband. To manage this, he's using forecasting tools to look 2 or 3 weeks ahead, specifically targeting players like Marko Arnautović before their fixtures turn favorable. Honestly, the most interesting part here isn't the math, it's the psychology. Southerns mentioned he's actually playing better this year because he's doing less public commentary. It turns out when you aren't constantly explaining your homework to the internet, it's a lot easier to take the kind of risks that actually win mini-leagues. Anyway, the plan is simple. Go cheap up top, spend big in the middle, and don't be afraid to take a -4 if it fixes your structure for the next month. Alright, look, a few other things worth knowing before you head out. First, let's talk about Harambe. It's been 8 years, but the internet's favorite dead gorilla is still a massive intellectual property asset. The photographer who took the iconic shot has spent years aggressively trademarking the image and shutting down anyone trying to make a buck off it. It's a weirdly perfect example of how we can turn a tragic moment of animal captivity into a permanent litigious commodity. I guess the meme is free, but the t-shirt will cost you. Speaking of things we think we own, the US dollar isn't as American as the flag wavers might want you to think. The word itself is a linguistic hand-me-down from a German term for a Spanish silver coin, which was mostly minted using Mexican silver. It's a reminder that monetary sovereignty is kind of a polite fiction. the global economy was a messy, interconnected web long before the Fed showed up to start printing the stuff. While we're on the subject of money, there's a growing argument that the military-industrial complex is actually just a subsidiary of the financial-industrial complex. The idea is that the people controlling fiat currency and global capital flows are the ones actually holding the leash on technology and the military. It's a pretty grim view of the world, but when you look at who actually funds the hardware, it's hard to say they're wrong. And finally, if you're diving into the World Cup fantasy game, the substitution rules are basically a lesson in systemic optimization. Unlike the standard leagues, you can swap out starters who've already played for guys on your bench who haven't stepped on the pitch yet. It turns the whole match day into a rolling experiment in risk management, which honestly sounds more like a second job than a hobby. Good luck with that. That's the news. Go do something useful with it, or at least try not to get distracted by the urgency addiction.